The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
To the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only still annoying TSN podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser as usual. Plenty to get to as the Saskatchewan Roughriders did have their first game of the regular season against the Ottawa Redblacks, their first win of the year as well, in which, as we thought, turned out to be a pretty dandy football game with a good amount of scoring, especially for week one. We will get into that. Unfortunately, a bunch of injuries to come out of that game seems to be the trend with the Riders lately, so we'll talk about that, which also led to the signing of Kadeem Carey as well.
Yes, who apparently is just there to be on the practice roster. We totally swear. That's what everybody's saying.
Yeah, of course. but yes, I alluded to it. I wrote the piece over the weekend because they said I could, and I figured why not. Was, of course, TSN, after what was, it's been 84 years, finally introduced a new look. Yeah. We saw some of it on Thursday night with a brand new scorebug, which has since been...
I like it.
Yeah, and has already been tweaked a couple of times. I can already tell you there is another tweak coming this week.
Oh, interesting.
You will see, for the first time ever, records for the teams on the scorebug as well.
Oh, I like that. That is
happening. A friend of the show, Bryce, is very excited about that because that is something he's been wanting on there forever.
Well, and it's kind of just become a thing with scorebugs, is having records mm-hmm. on there. I mean, no matter what. I mean, that's a good way to, you know, catch the attention of the casual observer or the betting audience or whoever, right? So, no, that's, again, lots of positive.
Mm-hmm, lots of positive there. So I thought the scorebug was a little clean. It was clean. It was good. Of course, there were some issues. I think, especially night one Thursday, yeah. when the play clock was in red the entire time, which made yes. it a little difficult to read. It still does it for the final few seconds, which whatever. But now they changed that to white. It looks a little better. I think they cleaned up the font a little bit. Maybe it's just the TVs at the Mosaic Stadium press box that made it look a little off. I don't know. You'd have to answer that one for me, John.
No, I thought it looked a little different the first night compared to the second. Not a major change, but
yeah.
Again, even on like my tiny TV where the kids aren't watching stuff, it looked pretty yep. clean. So that might be a press box yeah. TV thing. I thought it looked good.
Maybe, yeah. So it wasn't terrible. It just seemed something just didn't seem right with it. It looked better the second night too. So maybe it was just the TVs there. Flag color changed to the correct color as well. So that was all fun and dandy. The big change, of course, came Friday night, where we got the debut of the new Friday Night Football.
Yeah.
Overall, I'd say fairly positive. This won't surprise you, coming from the both of us, heavy curling Canada vibes, which shows the direction I think TSN is going with most of this stuff. The theme song, especially, like not the one the players sang, which we'll get into, but the actual dramatic music that they use for the intro afterwards. I'm like, oh, this seems somewhat familiar. Like, it wasn't at all like the CFL, the Curling Canada events on TSN, but it was sort of had the same vibe and the same with the graphics pack, felt familiar but different, which is fine. I mean, that's...
It's almost like they got a two-for-one deal on overly dramatic, serious theme songs and
maybe.
Played one to the CFL and one to Curling Canada, right? Which... In fairness, does fit a bit more with the CFL than it does for curling. So I would also say another good change.
Yeah, so that looked good. I didn't mind any of that. There was, of course, the players singing before the old Friday Night Football theme song.
Yeah.
Which I didn't mind. I enjoyed it.
No.
This is where I start to, you know, grab the attention of some people at TSN, apparently, according to people on Twitter, at least.
Right.
Was that... They liked it, and we're going to see it a lot, apparently, which, okay. My only issue with it is, if it runs every week, I think it might get a little old. I think as a one-off, or maybe again, you know, the last week, you know, occasionally, I think it's a good idea. Every week, it just might get a little old, I don't know.
Yeah, to me, it's very much a until Labor Day thing, unless you start getting, like, maybe you start having your play, whoever, like, you pick a Friday night player of the game and have them sing one line or something. You can maybe compile that for the second half of the season or something. But, yeah, something that's kind of kitschy like that does generally tend to run out of steam. And I get what they're trying to do, and they're trying to make it, like, you know, we're all waiting all day for Sunday night. And say what you
want. But they didn't want to, like, pay someone to sing it.
Well, and that's it. Like, there's so many good things that you think if you wanted the Friday Night Football theme song to come back, like, I'd love to hear, like, an Arkell spin on it, right? Or let's go way out there. Let's get Our Lady Peace or...
Third and one from the gun under the Friday Night Lights.
Sorry. Right? Oh. You know who'd be perfect? That's Canadian? Danko Jones. Could you imagine like a Danko Jones Friday Night Football anthem?
Like, is he still like doing music? I haven't heard anything from him forever.
Well, the real reason he's so top of mind.
Or is he doing like the nostalgia tour thing? Is he coming to Saskatoon or something? Is that why you're thinking about him?
He's coming to Saskatoon at the, which is funny. So now the Saskatoon.
This is not a paid promotion, by the way. Don't worry.
Oh, no. God, no. No, unless somebody wants to send me some free Danko tickets, then I'll take them. I did interview him once. The story about him headbanging so hard he popped his eyeball out is true. Or detach his retina. Anyways, the Saskatoon X has started doing this thing where they have, like, you know, the grandstand show or whatever, and then they have a second show after, and that's gone from, like, you know, local Saskatoon bands to, like, last year was a Trans-Canada Highway band, and Stephen Page is there this year, and Danko Jones, and it's, like, not big enough for grandstand, but definitely big enough for, like, a 10 p.m. show that you show up, that you take some edibles, you roll up to, and it's just awesome. So, that is why Danko is top of mind. But again, Canadian rock band that could do something different that, like, would get you fired up. I could see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with you. The player thing is cool. It was really cool for week one. It's probably going to be cool till about Labor Day. But after that, it's going to kind of become like Triumphs lay it on the line for anybody that's been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, just underwhelming and a little out of it. But, no, I thought it was good. I always love, though, and I have to speak more carefully than you.
Yeah, if I've already burned this bridge so hard, there's no chance that anyone at Bell Media is ever going to hire me. So
I did end up back on Saskatoon Media Group Airwaves for a brief period of time. So not anything is possible. But I just think... And it's funny that with the Scorebug, they're clearly listening and reacting to fans and opinions.
Yeah. I mean, it took a while. I mean, most of this has been happening. Most of this has been asked for a while. I think it took a change at the top with Paul Graham finally retiring to enact some of this change, I guess.
Right, but you even see the change, like, in game one. Okay, we need this on the bottom. Yeah. We need this. And it seems like, okay with that, they're listening. Even the panel, having, you know, now that I think Kate is in a headspace to do this full time again... You know, I love your note about the two panelists. You're right. Three just was maybe a little bit too much. Yeah,
they did three on Saturday, unfortunately, after I wrote that.
Yeah, but you're right, though. Two is clean.
Yeah, no, two always, there's the odd times they do two. It just flows so much better.
So
no matter, even with a guy like David Sanchez on there, it is far more tolerable than when there's three of them.
Yes.
You know?
Actually, I didn't mind, and... we know my feelings about David Sanchez, but I thought he was way better in that space, that it was less of a pissing contest and more of a, okay, break down this game. I like the fact there was pregame.
Yeah.
You know, there's a nice, complete pregame show with features and everything, like a lot of positives. And it's funny, they enact all this change and you make one comment about, it's just it, like, I couldn't imagine being a TSN staffer reading your article and going, well, I'm going to call out about this, right?
Well, actually.
Well, right, exactly. Like for one, the AI sucked.
Yes. Get rid of it. So to clarify here, I made the point that apparently I missed it on Thursday night for the Ryder game because obviously I was watching more so what was happening on the field.
Right.
There was apparently an AI element on Thursday, and after that there was an AI element in every single game. And what they're trying to do is they're basically doing what a lot of NFL broadcasts do, where they have these really goofy graphics to describe some kind of story they want to tell. For the record, I hate them on every single broadcast. They are terrible on Monday Night Football. They are terrible on Sunday Night Football. Just stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Just put up a plain graphic to tell us what you're telling us.
and let your personality carry it, right?
Yes. So The one I saw on Friday night specifically, they had Jason Maas and Ryan Dinwiddie at political rallies to describe how the teams, for some reason, for how the teams went basically polar opposites from 23 to 24 in terms of winning the division during the regular season and winning the division in the playoffs, which is a fun fact and an interesting thing to talk about it. I don't know why they talked about it that way, but that's the whole point. And then it was very weirdly awkward AI. Then there was they had appeared in every game, and I have a lot of problem with artificial intelligence, which is just fancy code.
And I really want to get into creatives, it. Right.
I mean, yeah. It steals jobs from creative. There's a lot of, you know, moral issues with it in terms of that, in terms of how much energy it uses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the product just wasn't good on top of all of that.
Right.
Quite frankly, more than anything, the product wasn't that good. And, you know, generally speaking, the whole point why for big companies to use AI in the sort of way that TSN used it was to cut costs, not employ as many people, and to make it quicker and easier. According to people at TSN, apparently, using the AI in the way they did and adding to the broadcast required more talented people, required more time, and required more money. And they're also bad. So what exactly are we accomplishing here with this? What exactly are we accomplishing? If they were good, like if they were legitimately good, it could be okay. I have problems with this, but at least, you know, they're paying for it. At least they have people working on it still, et cetera, et cetera. But it was all of that, and it was still bad, which is like, as far as I know, it defeats the entire purpose of what we're doing with AI.
So you're creating more work for people. You're making it look worse than just what you would have done with the graphics or an analyst or still photos or whatever. Like, you're right. We have both talked about how much we hate the Monday Night and Sunday Night Football weird graphics, and I get why they do it. It's eye-catching. It gets people talking. It creates reactions. But I get it. The CFL, the quote-unquote CFL family on socials can be overwhelmingly negative at times. But I feel like I agreed with that consensus that it was weird. It was like that uncanny valley kind of early AI you saw, and I just didn't like it. But again, you made two valid points out of basically a piece that's 90% praising them, and that's what they decided to make a comment on, which, again, like, I would be shocked, especially the way that Bell Media operates. If it's costing more money and more time, AI, and everybody hates it, it'll be gone. It'll be gone in a hurry, hopefully. So maybe we'll see it this weekend. If not, it's just more reason to cringe or add it to a drinking game or whatever.
It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible. I don't know. Overall thoughts. Still some work to be done, but I mean, big change to this broadcast was not going to happen overnight. It was always going to take time. But it is clear that they are changing. And for the most part, overall, I would say fairly positive change.
I would agree. I like some of the new additions until randomly Luke Wilson's going rogue on social media. I think I have a very different opinion of his addition this morning to right now, as we record this on a Wednesday, the 11th, where I thought Luke on the broadcast, I saw Luke speak earlier this year. You told me that this was coming. I was like, this is great. He's a big name. He's got a big following. I love him with Jay Onwright. And on the broadcast, he brought a lot of that. A little rough around the edges, you know, as a sideline reporter.
Some timing needs to be worked out, but that'll be figured out over time, right?
Exactly. So sideline reporting is a tough gig, right? So, like, I see this as a Luke Wilson fan, and then randomly we sit here on a Wednesday night, and he's going out on social media going, half of this is okay, even though there's a little bit of shade thrown at a lot of us here at Three Down Nation, that, okay, if you want to salute the best CFL fans randomly on a Wednesday night, go for it. But, like, then to, like, flip around and be like, these guys are the worst, it feels really petty and soft. Especially, too, when you're, like, on the broadcast going after a bunch of fans that aren't on it. Like, I get it, engagement and all this stuff, but, like, to single people out, well, you're the one with the national platform and on national TV, seems really shitty of you. And I'm a little surprised that somebody hasn't gone to him and be like, okay, we see what you're trying to do, we appreciate it, but walk it back. Like, I know even myself, but again, like, largely was me giving up on negativity kind of across all platforms. That was my own choice for my own mental health. But, like, just randomly going after people that then respond about it. Like I saw Lawless from Winnipeg, or was it Hustler? I forget, one of the two.
It's Hustler, yeah. Hustler, yeah.
From Winnipeg Sports Radio. Or Sports Talk Winnipeg, whatever the heck they're called. I'm drawing a blank right now, which is shameful because they do great work. So Hustler calls him out basically for saying what we're saying, and he goes, basically, you look like a boomer, change your picture. Like, come on. Like, schoolyard bully bullshit? Like, what are you doing? Figure it out, Luke. You're a well-liked guy. You're really popular. And it's this kind of shit that's going to have everybody that watches the CFL not take you seriously and not want you there anymore. And that's a bad mix for everybody.
Absolutely. What was a good mix was all the pieces for the Saskatchewan Roughriders on Thursday evening as they picked up their first win of the year in entertaining fashion over the Ottawa Redblacks. So we will get into that game and a whole bunch more. But always, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
Oh, I did not mix it good, or one could argue maybe a little too good. I was in a golf tournament yesterday, and as you do with golf tournaments, you pack a little birdie juice, especially when you win the whole thing by going 8-under on 12 holes, which, by the way, booyah, team ends Toyota. So I had some leftover birdie juice, so I mixed that up with more vodka and ice, all from our friends, Lucky Bastard. Apparently I mixed it a little strong, so we'll see how the end of the
show
goes.
Whoa, you don't say. Never.
But this one, even when I'm going, whoo, that's when you know.
That's when you know it's strong, when John Fraser's like, whoo, boy.
Yeah, that's
a strong one.
It might kill another person, so I'm also glad that in waiting for you to finish up, doing research, waiting for you to finish up and get ready, I didn't go with the double white IPA that's sitting in my fridge right now. I went with a Cork Strangeness and Charm from Pile of Bones and Nokomis. So a little slice of orange, real good. But I actually have my water bottle here, and I might need to water down my vodka for the first time in my entire adult life.
Fair enough, yeah. For me, I grabbed the Nokomis mixer pack last week on my way out the door out of work on Friday. And I have with me the Nokomis Golden Ale, just a nice, light, easy drinking beer that tastes like beer.
That's right. Can't go wrong with that.
Because sometimes after a day, that's just all you want. You don't want a lot of bells and whistles. It's like, you know what? I just want a beer. So I essentially just grabbed a beer. So
can't go wrong with that, especially for a long day.
Nope. Can't go wrong with your Saskatchewan Roughriders either. As they had a pretty good night last Thursday. They picked up a win over the Ottawa Redblacks in fairly impressive fashion, though they had to hang on for the win, and we'll get into that. But for three quarters of that game, it's safe to say that concerns over what we saw in the preseason, especially from the offense, were perhaps overblown. Yes. As Trevor Harris and the gang, they looked good. It was an impressive performance for the most part. And I think it's pretty much what we expected to see from this team. The offense was good. The running game wasn't, you know, overpowering, wasn't dominant, but for the most part was there. And you know, the defense was there. The defense, frankly, should have made a ton more plays than they did. They probably dropped about 6 possible interceptions in that game.
Yeah.
Which is really just sort of, you know, take that in with the Riders also giving up 3 fumbles, I believe. Is kind of a regression to the mean after last season when they were like plus 306 in turnovers.
Which again, will never be sustainable. And hopefully you're able to keep that up, or at least, you know, not keep up the constant fumbling, again, looking for player stats on that. And, that apparently doesn't exist on the CFL's website on number of fumbles.
Yep, I believe there was 3. Anyway, it was a pretty good performance overall. The big story and the big takeaway from the game, however, remains an ongoing theme in Saskatchewan, and that is a bunch of players are hurt again, and a bunch of Redblacks got hurt in that game too, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, well, I guess what's not interesting, what's unfortunate is, again, AJ Ouellette went down with an apparent head injury in that game. He got hit pretty hard down by the goal line and did not return after that. Roland Milligan Jr. injured as well in that game, along with Kian Schaefer-Baker, who appeared to suffer a foot injury, and Peyton Collins, the left tackle, as well. So, I mean, 4 important spots. Overall, 7 guys, as we record this on Wednesday, did not practice on Wednesday.
Wow.
Which, not a great sign after week 1.
No.
And what has led to, though, is the signing of Kadeem Carey, which is an interesting one. I don't hate it. Like, I understand you need to add a running back to the roster because Mario Anderson, as we saw in preseason, is not ready to be, I believe, a professional running back just yet. He may get there, but he's not there yet. So I think you needed someone, and Keem Carey obviously is very familiar with Mark Mueller and Corey Mace and all that, so it makes sense. I just hope that they make sure that Thomas Bertrand-Houdon remains on the field and remains an important part of the offense, because it's clear every time this guy gets a chance and every time this guy plays ball, he's a guy. He's a dude, and he should be given the opportunity. He doesn't necessarily need to be an every down back, but he needs the opportunity to be the feature guy.
Well, 100%. And they're saying the right things about Kareem DeCarey coming in, and oh, he's a practice roster guy. And he's even saying, oh, I'm going to work my way up the practice roster like I did before. And this is the only situation he wanted. But you're not bringing in a guy like that to not play him. Yeah. Right. So I'm with you. I want to see Bertrand-Houdon continue to get playing time because the guy is a gamer. I wonder what this means for the long-term future of AJ Ouellette. I am a little surprised reading today that he's cleared concussion protocols and still brought in DeCarey. So that, to me, I don't know if the writing's on the wall, what his contract structure looks like, but you got to think at some point, AJ Ouellette has been largely underwhelming here. Mm-hmm. At some point, does it make sense to just release him before Labor Day? Like, I'm with you. Bertrand-Houdon has to play. Like,
yes, he has to play. And he will be on the roster because he's an important special teamer. But he's got to see some significant time on offense.
Yeah, he does. So you're telling me you're going to rotate between Ouellette and DeCarey per game?
DeCarey, yeah. Probably not.
Like, to me, there's, I get it. You're saying all these great things. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, we got the best running back room in the league and this and that. But to go out and sign this guy, you're not gonna not play him, to be frank, right? So I was a little surprised by the move when it turned out Ouellette was healthy. But I guess, you know, if you got a great player available, that's just kind of what you have to do.
I suppose, yeah. And like, my only real, you know, concern about this really going on about it is this sort of the first thing we're going to see of Corey Mace's tenure, of him just being unnecessarily stubborn about something? That's like, fair. Not to say that he sees that little in Thomas Bertrand-Houdon, but is there just, you know, does he have this thing in his mind where he's like, okay, we have AJ Ouellette and I got to get King Carrot, and like, I have to have this big American running back as our starting running back. Mm-hmm. Like, it certainly kind of feels that way. Because, I mean, they brought in guys when AJ got hurt last year and as well. And it's like, this kid who was a third-string running back at an HBCU as a French-Canadian is doing pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just give him a chance. And again, I have no problem with them signing Kadeem Carey if he actually remains as the backup and, you know, kind of a guy to take a few reps. Because I do believe, as we talked about earlier in the year, with AJ Ouellette, the same situation is you can't run your running back into the ground this early in the year. So you do need to spell guys off. When I mean feature back, I mean give, you know, Thomas Bertrand-Houdon still 40 to 60% of the snaps kind of thing and let Carey sort of carry the rest.
No, you're absolutely bang on that. And I almost wonder though, if it's a little bit of pressure, internal pressure too, because let's face it, it's really easy to find backup American offensive linemen or running backs, pardon me. Right. Yeah. It's really easy to find these guys. It's a little harder to find a guy with a Canadian passport as your backup running back if you happen if that's the situation to happen to go with. So,
well, here's the thing with that. I mean, they can still have an American backup for Bertrand-Houdon because he would just be an extra Canadian. They already are starting like eight Canadians anyway.
Right.
So what's the harm in putting the ninth guy out there? Or maybe it allows you to make a change somewhere else if you really want to. So there isn't really the rush to find a Canadian running back to back up Thomas Bertrand-Houdon because you don't really need him as a starter. But if he is your best option right now and he's playing like it, you might as well just start the guy, passport or not.
No, and that's it. He's proven in limited, you know, in limited carries every single time he's seen the field that he's that guy. So to me, what I would like to see them do, you know, you'd have to think Ouellette is probably going to be in the one game this week, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're probably going to let Kareem come on in and be the guy, even though he might not know the playbook that well. But to me, you start Bertrand-Houdon, You got Kareem as your backup right now, who can come on in and fill that role if Bertrand Hudon doesn't ball out. And if he does ball out, well, then we have to have the difficult conversation about AJ Ouellette, and that might just be welcome to One Game Island. One Game Island,
or maybe he agrees to go on the six. Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
something like that. You know, I'm sure maybe he can just go do Prairie Pro Wrestling in the offseason, because it's just, he seems like a really likable guy and a fan favorite, and says the right things and does the right things, but the experiment has not worked.
No.
Between injuries, between, you know, limited success in when he has played. So let's see, and it'll be interesting when the depth chart comes out for this week. Let's see Bertrand Hudon get the ball, get him another 14 to 20 carries, and go from there.
Hmm. One of the other interesting takeaways from this game was, and this is the thing we've harped on a lot, is this team's inability to just put teams away.
Right.
And, like, they were up 31-14 after three quarters. And then the offense, as it does at a certain point, just stalled out and stalled out and stalled out. When really, one more score, maybe even a field goal, might have just shut the whole thing down. And they didn't get anything. They scored on five of their first eight drives and then nothing after that, which allowed the Red Blacks to kind of hang around and give themselves a chance to win. And they might have, if Bob Dice doesn't make a puzzling decision to punt from the, you know, basically around midfield with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you on that. That you need that kill shot. I don't know what, it's almost like they're doing the opposite of halftime adjustments. It's like at halftime, they're deciding, you know, okay, we're going to get worse. Like, whatever adjustments they're making at half are sometimes not, or even into the third quarter, it's not working. Like, I don't know if you can have teams that have a lack of killer instinct or anything like that. And I don't think it's it. It's just something just goes away. And I know we've, you know, kind of given the flowers to Bertrand Hudon. I think a big part of that is every offensive coordinator since the dawn of time thinks, okay, you're up big, I got to run. Right, you have one of the most accurate and quickest passers in basically CFL history in Trevor Harris. Mm. Just stick to the script. Like, don't change it. What works for you for three quarters will continue to work, and just keep doing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's not much to harp on there. It's just something else that it happened again, and it's something to keep an eye on. Another interesting point that you brought up because of Trevor Harris. Remember, there was a lot of talk going into this game about the state of the offensive line and the number of injuries, and how we talked about we weren't that worried about it.
Yep.
And we were proven correct. The no Ryder quarterback took a sack in that game,
which is why.
And I think Trevor Harris scrambled away once, but for the most part, he wasn't really under a huge amount of duress, a huge amount of stress in that game. And this just continues the theme of what it's always been. And I think a lot of it is just the offense, and a lot of it's just Trevor Harris. Yes. You know, I don't, no offense to the guys up front, but when Trevor gets the ball out that fast, I think we just got to start accepting that it doesn't, I mean, to a certain point, it doesn't matter how banged up this offensive line is, because it just keeps on chugging. Now, if suddenly all five starters are gone, we may be having a different conversation,
right?
But as long as there's a few guys in there that can hold up to some degree, they're generally going to be okay on that front, I think.
It's almost one of the weirder situations where, let's face it, they're still pretty good along the interior, right? Like Logan Ferland, the two guards, are not the kind of guys that we're worried about right now. It's when you get an experience, you get youth, it's the tackle position you're typically worried about, right? And you're less worried about that when the ball's coming out so quick, because guys don't have the time to get around those tackles and get at the quarterback. So, I like to say that we were right. Again, depending on how many guys get injured, and I think that directly correlates with how many times they play at home, it seems to be. That, you know, it might, at some point we might be looking at, oh God, we need some more guys there. But right now it's a great combination. It's working for them. And I that's also why I don't get that late in games, they move away from Trevor Harris and try to insist on running.
Yeah. And so you brought it up, of course, Peyton Collins, the left tackle got hurt in that game. One of many guys who got hurt in that game for both teams, Drew Brown and some others also look like they're going to be missing for the Ottawa Red Blacks this week in their game. The game at Mosaic Stadium, you know, anecdotally, I didn't actually look up all the numbers and see everyone's injury charts. Seems like it was the most injured game of the week. Part of that could be Thursday Night Football in general. The other part of it, and I don't have an actual answer for this, but it feels like this has been a trend, and I am starting to wonder about the turf at Mosaic Stadium. And I know injuries are going to happen. It's a fact of football, no matter what surface you play on, no matter what situations you're put in, anything can happen anytime. But the sheer volume of injuries and injury timeouts that happen at Mosaic Stadium every single week for, frankly, a few years now, it's pretty hard to ignore. Yes. And I know, you know, the people at FieldTurf say the lifespan's about 8 to 10 years. Well, we're at 10 years right now on this thing. So I don't know if there are discussions going on about replacing this. And then there'll be a whole other discussion about who's going to pay for it, because it is a city-owned facility, realistically only for one major tenant, though. So, but that conversation has to start, because quite frankly, I think it's got to be due, and it's maybe not, you know, the number one factor as to why so many guys are getting hurt, but it certainly has to be a contributing factor at this point.
No, certainly. And you did the research a bit. It says FieldTurf, and this is right from FieldTurf, which is installed at Mosaic Stadium. It is 8 to 10 years it should be replaced. Okay. Yeah. The first thing to happen at Mosaic Stadium was the Rams and the Huskies on October the 1st of 2016. So we're already quickly approaching 9 years. And as you mentioned before we came into this, the Riders, unlike a lot of teams, practice on that same turf, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the Rams.
Yep. I think most of the Prairie teams do, but no one else really does.
No, certainly. And most of the Prairie teams, even the notoriously cheap Calgary Stampeders, have replaced their turf. So I think it's something to keep an eye on as the season goes on. It is very important. I know, speaking from personal experience, and I do have a tiny bit of knowledge with this, is I know lacrosse turf, they basically say after 5 years, it's garbage, and that is getting used so much less than any kind of football turf and not exposed to the elements and so on and so forth. So I think you're right. It is a discussion that needs to happen. I mean, the last fiscal for this team said they lost $1.1 million, but that's the unfortunate reality of using artificial turf. And I know, you know, things have gotten better, things have gotten, you know, the technology's advanced and all this kind of stuff, but you're still, at the end of the day, you still need to, you know, go ahead and you're going to have to replace this because it's running out of time.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I don't know how this is going to happen. It feels like the time comes, whenever the conversation starts, unless the Riders are feeling generous, we're probably going to see a fight between them in City Hall to see eventually who actually pays for this thing. And I'm not even entirely sure. Like, I think there's a part of me that says definitely the Riders should pay for it. But on the other side of it, I'm like, well, they are also just the tenant of the facility. So I could see the argument that the city should also pay for it. So I don't even know which side of this I fall on.
Right. Yeah, and you know, it's going to be sticky. It's going to be a strange one. It's going to be a battle, especially with all the, you know, all the turmoil and real and stuff like that in City Hall down in Regina this year. But yeah, it's going to be a great fight. However, did you know, I'm on the FieldTurf website, A, it costs approximately $770,000, but B, you can finance it.
Ooh, so the question is, can John sell undercoating for it?
I'll do my best.
A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the U.S. has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the U.S. just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.